All Three Beards Media podcasts originate from the Gravitate Co-working Studio, sponsored by Revelton Distilling Company.
Hey, what is up, everybody? We are back. New year, new start, new season. We made it into second season, Bill. False starts. What's up?
Is that what we're going to call this season two episode?
That's right. We flipped that switch at the beginning of the year just to make us look good.
Is that what we're going to do? That's what it'll be the first of the year.
That's right.
It's the season change.
That's right. Yeah.
All right. I'll take it. I'm ready for fucking Quantum Leap or some shit to start making new episodes.
Hey. That new Quantum Leap show is legit. That's
Have you good. Watched it?
I love that new show.
Yeah, I loved the old one.
I did too.
Okay, so did you watch it like as a kid? Have you watched the old one like
in recently?
Adulthood? Yes.
Yeah. Yes. I watched reruns all the time. And I did try to rewatch it in order a couple years ago, but then I just got busy. So.
It was one of my favorite things ever on the road because I would like, in fact, this happened when we'll bring him on in a minute, but this actually happened when I met our guest for the first time. I was in Orlando and Tampa back to back, which was the it was when we played in the Outback Bowl in 2016. So the year following the 2015 season, so we were playing the Outback Bowl and I got a hold of the booker at the Funny Bone Improv booker. And I was like, hey, it's on my bucket list to go to a bowl game. If January, you know, if New Year's isn't booked at one of these clubs, I'd love to go. And well, they happened to give me both clubs back to back, Tampa and Orlando. Oh, okay. So I was there for 2 weeks. Well, you're only at the club Thursday through Saturday.
Right.
So all those other days are off and you're in a hotel room by yourself and whatever else. So I binged the whole series of Quantum Leap, the first series, that week, those 2 weeks. And I hadn't watched it since I was a kid, and I never really watched it in order or anything, just randomly. So I had so much fun with all the little, like there was one where somebody was choking just randomly, like had nothing to do with the actual
episode. Yeah.
And he just like gives him the Heimlich maneuver. Right. And then as the guy's walking away, this lady's like, are you okay, Mr. Heimlich?
Yes, I know. That's so great.
I remember just a ton of shit like that I didn't catch when I was a kid, you know?
Right. I remember that very few shows. And again, we'll get to our guests, but very few shows are there like an end of a show where you're just kind of your mouth kind of drops and you're like, holy shit. And that was the one where he was playing magic in Vietnam, and he had to make a choice whether to go save his brother or not. And this POW was being marched down the side, and he didn't save him. And they went back and looked, and it was Al, and he could have saved Al. And I was just like, I don't know how to process that. I'm really upset.
Well, and then you find out on the new season that Magic was the guy that he saved. Yes.
I sat there and tried to do the math the other day. I was like, that can't be right. Magic can't be in 2024 if he was in Vietnam. There's no way that timeline works. It actually does, because Ernie Hudson is like 75, and in real time,
he just looks great.
That's what Magic would be, is around 72 or what. Yeah, he just looks Hollywood 75. Yeah. That's what it is. All right, nobody wants to listen to us talk about Quantum Leap. We need a whole nother episode for Quantum Leap, man.
Nerd that's out just stupid awesome. Shit. Yeah, right?
I'll let you introduce our guest. Since you are the mayor of the North End Zone, I'll let you introduce
our guest. Well, yeah, and that's obviously one of those things that was bestowed upon me. That is not a self whatever. I don't know. I didn't do it. But anyway, I met our guest for the first time when I was at I was at the Outback Bowl, and I was there by myself. Obviously, I was there for 2 weeks. I just had a ticket, and I showed up, and I tweeted out that I was looking for a tailgate. And of course, I get a tweet back from Hawkeye Elvis telling me where his tailgate is. So I met our guest Greg Suckow in character for the first time as Hawkeye Elvis at the Outback Bowl. He's very generous, and of course, no one was surprised by that. But Greg, thank you so much for coming on with us today and talking about you know, mental health and men and all that good stuff.
All that good stuff. And real quick, there are two. You were talking about Quantum Leap. I love that show. Two episodes in particular. One, he goes to some ranch in Texas, and you go all the way through the entire episode.
I know exactly the one you're talking about.
I do too.
What was the point of the episode? And yes. Buddy, he's like, hey, buddy, try singing Peggy Sue. And bam, that's what he leaves.
Right.
Yes. That was what that would have been my second one that I was going to bring up. That's
yep. And then obviously the next to last episode of the whole series, when he jumps into Elvis in 1954 in Memphis and has to go play Bill Boone in Kentucky. So love that episode.
That's such a good show. It's this classic. Scott Bakula's American treasure.
Just oh my God. He's been acting for so long. He's been in everything.
Remember Necessary Roughness?
Oh, I loved him in that. Quarterback. I loved him in that.
Give me
throwing
Sinbad
the football against the little tackling dummy.
Sinbad on the line, Scott Bakula at quarterback, and Kathy Ireland as kicker any day.
Any day. Absolutely.
Robert Loggia, the coach that was going to have a heart attack because he was screaming in the hat. He like ripped his tie off. Right, he like ripped his tie off and everything else. He's like, I hate this tie. I hate this whole fucking thing. He's screaming.
No, that's what I'm kind of waiting for most of the time. That's when the cops come over to talk to me in the north end zone all the time because I just look like I'm going to get out of hand. I was thinking about this actually last night watching the national championship game because they showed a shot of Jalen Rose. And did you guys watch the game at all?
Yeah,
I watched the second half.
So you saw Jalen Rose. They were showing Jalen Rose, and he had his game face on. Like, he looked like he was playing. And yep. I was like, that's what everybody expects Jalen Rose to look like. Jalen Rose is having a great time right now.
Yes.
Jalen Rose is into this game right now. That's exactly what I look like, except they think because I'm not Jalen Rose and they don't know who I am, they think I might, like, hurt a child or something. But really, I'm just going to hurt a referee. But that's how that actually brings me to why we brought you on. You know, I'm one of those people, we're kind of opposite ends of the spectrum when it comes to fan. You're like a joy to be around, and I can ruin somebody's experience. Like, and you find that, you know, we were talking about depression and anxiety and things like that, and how almost in that sad clown sort of way, you know, you're covering under the guise of a smile and joy, you know, and spreading it just with your presence. Whereas I'm more so, you know, I don't give a shit if I feel bad, look at me, you know, like, <Yep. laughs> but what do you think that, you know, when you're feeling, if you're having a bad day, a bad week, whatever, do you find that putting the Hawkeye Elvis gear on kind of brings you out of it?
You know, it's really interesting. I started off, people are like, well, why did you start doing this? You know, I'm like, I started off doing it because I thought it'd be fun. I'd gone to Ann Arbor, Michigan in the 2006 year. And there was a dude dressed up kind of like Elvis. I'm like, okay, that's kind of cool. And then in 2009, I'm at a game on Halloween, the Tyler Sash pinball interception.
Oh, that was my son's first game.
And I look around the crowd and everybody's got these awesome costumes on. There's Hawkeye, Darth Vader, Hawkeye, Captain America. Mm-hmm. And so I go back to my mom. She lived in Boone at the time. I'm like, Mom, can you make me a black and gold Hawkeye themed jumpsuit? Well, mom worked for the DOT for 25 years before she retired, but she could have easily gone to Hollywood and been working the costume department because she's an amazing seamstress. She would always like hand make all of the grandkids' Halloween costumes and make sure they were screen authentic. And so she spent a year making the first jumpsuit. And I showed up on October 30th, 2010, as Hawkeye Elvis, and just because it'd be fun. And then I'd wear it to like one basketball game. Then the next year I'd wear it to two football games and two basketball games. And then when I wouldn't dress up, people would go, "What the hell? Where's Elvis at? We need Elvis." Yeah. And then it really kind of exploded the year we played at North Carolina. You know, the famous Mike Gesell layup to beat North, you know, we're unranked, they're number 12. And I've got, I'm giving you a really long lead in, by the way, to answer your question, Bill. I will get there. Trust me.
You're good. You're good.
Those are the kind of guests we like. The ones that just keep talking.
That's what we want.
Excellent. So, I've got a group of friends, in Atlanta. I call them the Atlanta homeboys. Two of them went to Iowa. One of them went to North Carolina. And we see each other at conferences a couple times a year. And when we found out that Iowa was going to play at North Carolina for the ACC Big Ten Challenge, we're like, oh, we're going to that game. And so the guys got tickets, and they just happened to be in the front row right behind the basket. Mm. And, you know, we stayed on campus at the Carolina Inn, which was really cool. And the people in Chapel Hill didn't quite know what to make of me when I was walking to the game. And, you know, it was funny because I've always said, you know, you can go anywhere you want when you're dressed as Elvis. And so we walked into the stadium and I start walking down to the floor and the guys are going, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "Just follow me." And I walk straight down to the floor and I walk over and I see Fran, who knows who I am, walk over, give him a big hug. We're chatting for a few minutes and the guy's like, "Nobody's tackling us or telling us to get off the floor. It's okay." But after the, you know, so, you know, it's tied with a minute left. Mike drives lane, gets fouled. He lands literally at my feet. And so I'm watching the ball to see if it's going to go in or not. It goes in and I'm like, "Yeah." And by that time, Adam Woodbury and Jared Utoff had come over and like helped them up. They're like, "Yeah." Mm-hmm. And we win the game. We're walking back, we go out to the bars, and one of my friends goes, "Oh, Greg, you've got to see this." And it's that picture of me at the North Carolina game going, "Yeah," with those guys right in front of me.
That's awesome.
And after that, this thing just kind of blew up from there. I had, I started doing, you know, some of the media around Central Iowa would want to do profile stories on me. The first guy to do a TV story was Mark Woodley at Channel 7 in Waterloo, who is one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. Mike Loss had me on his podcast, and it just kind of grew organically. Mm-hmm. And then I get an email from someone saying, "Well, does Elvis do appearances?" And I'm like, I don't know. What do you want me to do? Like, well, it was in Stuart, Iowa, you know, where Smiley the water tower is. Uh-huh. We go to, yeah, there it is. That's
the one. Google's a wonderful thing.
See?
Never thought I would type in Hawkeye Elvis North Carolina game.
Adam, boy, see, look at your producing skills are getting so much better, Chris.
So
I know, right? I had to block the porn before it came up.
Well, yeah. So I'm like, well, we do a classic car show. We wanted to get Cy down here and wanted to get Herky, but the schools wanted to charge too much. You know, we do a classic car show. We want somebody to come around and just hang out and smile and take pictures. I said, well, I can do that. Guy goes, well, what do you charge? I go, nothing. It's like, oh, well, we gotta pay you something. I said, tell you what, if you make a donation to the University of Iowa Children's Hospital, we'll call it fair. And they thought it was a great idea. It was a great event. And then I was fortunate enough to go back the next year and raise money for the Children's Hospital and walk around and do some fun stuff with both Iowa and Iowa State fans. So when I first, now I'm finally answering your question, Bill, when I first started, it was just to, you know, put on a costume and go to the game and have fun. As this persona has evolved, I really kind of flip a switch and get into character and get into the mindset. And I'm not pounding beers all the time when I'm doing that because I say I'm working. You know, Well, I have a beer with, you know, I always joke, if you guys know who Moose and Stump, well, Bill, you know who Moose and Stumpy are in Iowa City? Over by the shot trailer?
Yeah, vaguely. Yeah.
So I always go over and have my one pregame beer with Moose. And I'll, you know, I'll do a shot here and there and a shot there, but I get into this mindset where I literally block everything out and I'm Hawkeye Elvis for that day. The minute the wig and the sunglasses go on until the minute I take it off. And I'm the joy that I get from seeing people who are still happy to see me. You know, people have asked me, well, how long are you gonna keep doing this? And I don't know. And until I get tired of it or people get tired of it, you know, one of the two. But you know, it's hard sometimes because especially this fall, I've had a lot going on. My mom's health has been in terrible decline. And you know, I still will have to, you know, if I'm going to the game and I'm going to be Hawkeye Elvis, I got to stick all that stuff in a box. Yeah. I got to turn that off and I got to turn on the performance lights.
So, you know, when did you start struggling with any type of anxiety or depression or anything like that?
You know,
was it ever actually diagnosed? I mean,
yeah, but not until way later. I think, you know, because I grew up, I'm a little bit older than you guys. And I grew up, you know, I was in high school in the 80s. And my family wasn't, you know, we didn't have any money. And you guys know what a brutal place junior high can be, especially.
Sure. Yeah.
And so I really was desperate. You know, I really wanted to be popular and really wanted to make friends and things like that. And so, you know, that is kind of an earmark of a lack of confidence. And a lot of times anxiety and depression are tied to that lack of confidence because you start thinking, oh my God, I'm horrible. I suck. Nobody likes me. And then you start going down that rabbit hole. And so, I mean, I've always kind of had that feeling of wanting people to like me since I was a kid. I've always been a ham. When I was a kid at my grandma's house, I would sit and I would set up a news desk in front of a mirror and pretend to be Walter Cronkite reading the news. And it's funny. I'm gonna give you another really long answer, Bill. So
that's what we like.
You brace go
right
yourself. Ahead.
That's right.
So when I was in school, I was in everything. I'm from Ogden, Iowa. Mm-hmm. You know, Chris, you know where that is, right due west of Ames. Ames was the big town. And
I've driven through it quite a bit.
Yeah. And so I did everything. I played football, basketball, ran track. I did speech. I did drama. I did music. I did all those things. And having that sort of performance mindset, I think, really helped me a lot with regard to, you know, being able to put some of that anxiety and depression and stuff aside. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm hoping I get what I want from doing that in order to not feel anxious and not feel depressed and feel liked and feel wanted. And so naturally what I did is I went into journalism. And I went in and I discovered broadcast television. And so I was a media communications major and I did small market TV in Southeast Iowa and Northeast Missouri all through college and for a couple of years afterwards. And man, I love that. I love sitting on the news desk with the lights on and that red light and the camera flips on and it's go time. So to have sort of that, I've had that performance ability ingrained in me. Mm-hmm. And if you can handle it, when you mix that with a really deep need to be liked, sometimes if you're not careful, it will spiral off the rails and you'll think, oh my God, this person doesn't like me. Oh, I did something wrong. I'm horrible. Oh my God, I fucking suck. And you start to get lost in that swirl that anxiety and depression does to you. Your brain's mean. Your brain is really mean to you sometimes. And I read a great thing online a couple of days ago. Somebody said, your brain's job is to keep you alive, not to make you happy.
Right.
That is interesting.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It lies to you. You know?
Oh my God. It's so bad.
And it doesn't just lie to you in negative ways. It can lie to you in positive ways too.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you know, the absolute level of delusion that you have to have at some point in your life to think you can do stand-up comedy for a living. Or, you know, I mean, you know, just, and then those, but like you said, you know, anxiety in a lot of ways is your brain lying to you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, I'm like, a good way to explain it for me is always like, it's like this never ending feeling of unpreparedness.
Yeah.
Like whatever's going on, and being prepared for things always helps your anxiety level.
Oh yeah.
And I always looked at performing as kind of a vaccine. Like you said, you know, theater and all this stuff, like that little bit of anxiety that you would get, that little rush of adrenaline that you get before you go on stage or before you perform, that kind of acted as a vaccine for that general anxiety.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then every once in a while, it'll come and get you. Like I probably went 15 years without a major anxiety attack. And then I had one hit me like a ton of bricks.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
And they're awful when they hit, because, and you know, for me, I don't know if you guys have ever dealt with this, but rather than try to deal with any emotional trauma that I experienced, either as a child or growing up, or, you know, deal with or confront my emotions in a mature and adult way, I'd stick them in a box.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'd pour concrete over that box, and I'd bury it, and I'd forget about it. You can only do that for so long before the cemetery's full.
Right, and then it becomes too much of a weight
and
that you can bear.
And then it busts the fuck out in ways that you don't understand, you don't expect. Right. And that happened to me. And that happened to me not that long ago. It was pre-COVID, but it was probably 2018. I would just get really, like, I've got to just run out of the room screaming and jump out the window.
Yeah.
And I didn't know why. Or I didn't understand why I felt that way. And it's a hard thing to, it's the hardest thing in the world to admit that, oh my God, I got to talk to somebody about this. I got to go see a doctor. Like, well, do I really need to do that? Because look, you've got this great job. You've got a great family. Everybody loves you on Twitter in Iowa City. Can't you just stick that stuff away? You can, but again, that will come out at some point. And if you don't start dealing with it, it will overwhelm you.
Go
ahead. Sorry.
We've talked about, you know, public persona and putting on a public persona and people thinking that that's really what it is. And to your point, when you had said earlier about your brain talking you into that you're not good enough and things like that, you know, today is the 1 year anniversary that I lost a job last year. And that did a number on me for a several amount of months, because that was the first time that it really hit me that maybe my brain was right. Cause the entire time I was talking myself into the fact that I wasn't good enough and I'm fooling everybody. And then it was a reality check of maybe it's right. And then it just spirals worse and worse and worse.
And then go ahead, Bill.
Well, my imposter syndrome is my biggest, I mean, you know, that's what's always been really hard for me. Like I'm going tomorrow. I got to go buy a suit. I don't own a suit. I've never owned a suit. I think I have a jacket somewhere, but I don't think it fits. But I'm performing at the Remington Awards.
Oh, wow. Weekend. Congratulations.
So, yeah. Wow. So Willie and I'm performing at the dinner Friday night. Willie's performing at the actual award ceremony Saturday. And so I'm going to buy a suit for this thing. I've never performed at a black tie affair or anything. I mean, I've done plenty of corporate things, but I don't need to wear a suit. But the point is, my imposter syndrome is through the roof right now, because these guys hired me after seeing me in Omaha at the Funny Bone. They were at a show. Willie and I were there together, and they were at that show and then hired us for this thing. So I know that they know what I do, and I know that they enjoy what I do. yet and still, I don't feel that I belong here. And I don't know at all what to do about that other than just know this is just what I do and I'll go do it. I'll, you know, I mean, there's an autopilot on some level, but I mean, I don't know how to cope with imposter syndrome. I know, Greg, I know you're a lawyer, correct?
I am.
Have you a trial lawyer?
No, I do corporate real estate law.
Gotcha. Okay. So I'll have you in my back pocket for that shit.
I do know some great criminal defense attorneys, though. That's the nice thing about being a lawyer is.
Yeah. Oh, you know.
Oh, I need a, well, I do corporate real estate work. Oh, I need a criminal guy. Oh, call this guy. Oh, I need an estates and trust guy. Oh, call this guy.
Yeah. For my white collar crime.
Exactly.
So, I mean, do you find yourself suffering the same way? You know, does that imposter syndrome get to you in your job or
all,
in your social life more often?
All the time.
Yeah.
I still marvel at the fact that I'm an attorney. I went to law school. I passed the bar exam, which is a really, really hard test.
Yeah.
And it's funny too, because I've only worked for big corporations. I came out of law school and I had this big real estate background, and I went to work for Regis Corporation, which was the hair salon company based in Minneapolis. I was there for 6 years. I was at Sleep Number, also based in Minneapolis, for 10 years before I left. And now I work for Ross Stores as director of real estate law. And there are days I'm like, I hope someone doesn't find out that I don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I've been really successful in my career. If you look at my career on paper or LinkedIn or whatever, I've been really successful. You know, I went to law school part-time at night, worked full-time during the day, had both my kids, you know, did that. And I keep getting promoted and getting better jobs. So the other part of me is like, you must know something.
Right.
But yeah, no, I still have that. I was like, oh my God, this is a house of cards and it's going to go poof and all fall apart, you know? And I've had friends in my work industry who feel the same way. It's so much more prevalent than people realize.
I would sit at my job, when I was in, the IT department at a property management company. I came from Wells Fargo where it was such a meat grinder.
Oh God.
You know, you took a call, you took a call, you took a call, you took a call. And I would sit there working on things, and a ticket would come in, and I'd sit there and I'd be like, this seems really easy. Like, I feel like I'm fucking something up. It shouldn't be this easy. Mm-hmm. And I would sit there and I'd be like, well, nobody's came over here and told me what an idiot I am yet. So I guess I'll just keep going.
Yeah.
Or they're going to figure out that it's easy and they don't need me.
Right. Yeah. Or that. And, so like, it's right. So- but.
Yeah,
the and mind then part. I remember that after the first 3 months, they pulled the ticket numbers, and I had done three times the amount of tickets as the other two guys combined. And one of the guys came over and he was like, "Hey, you need to knock that shit off." And I was like, "So you want me to do my job worse so that you can look better? No, I don't think I'm gonna do that." But I mean, the whole time I'm like, I feel like I'm doing something wrong.
You know, even though
I was killing it and didn't know it.
How about this? Have you ever worried that if that imposter syndrome went away, you would lose whatever edge you do have? Like, to where, like, to me, imposter syndrome, in a sense, brings you to kind of this fork in the road where one side is, I'm afraid that if I lose this imposter syndrome, like, whatever it is that makes me funny, if I figure out what that is, I won't be funny anymore. And then also there's that, wow, if I actually did know this and got rid of this imposter syndrome, I'd be unstoppable.
You know, I think this is, that's a hard question. That's a good question, Bill.
Thank you.
It's a very good question. I think for me personally, a little bit, just a smidge of imposter syndrome kind of keeps you on your toes.
Keeps you humble, right?
Well, like, yeah, because there's, you know, I started off doing television sports and television news in the 90s, and that was a vicious cutthroat business. I mean, the internet didn't exist. I mean, it's such a different world today. You could go work at, you know, a local news channel somewhere in a state, or you could try to get lucky and go work for ESPN. You know, that was my dream when I was going to school and working afterwards. I wanted to go work at ESPN. And the sheer volume of people trying to get those jobs, you know, is intense, and the competition is intense, and you've got to really strive to be, you know, really sharp and not falter an inch. And law school is the same way. But the interesting thing for me is, as I've gotten older, is the nice thing with age. I mean, there's so many things that suck about getting old. My joints hurt all the time. It sucks. But you get perspective with age. And honestly, that has really, really been a wonderful thing to have. So many people go through their lives and don't have the gift of perspective, because perspective kind of helps knock down anxiety. It kind of helps knock down depression. Mm-hmm. And I'm just saying in a general sense, obviously those are still, you know, those are still conditions that people need to be treated medically for. I mean, hell, I take sertraline every day, and I have for 5 years. But with that, age comes perspective. And so, you know, the persona of the old guy who doesn't give a fuck at all, he's got freedom.
Yeah,
because he doesn't have imposter syndrome. He doesn't think he's good enough. He doesn't worry about any of that crap. He's like, I don't give a shit. This is who I am. And if you don't like me, that's on you. Go somewhere else.
Well, and this is, I mean, I talked about this earlier. Like, I've gotten to this point where, like, I'm not concerned with accomplishing a fucking thing. Like,
yeah.
I don't care what whatever accomplishments I set out are my own. And I'll either accomplish them or not. Like, I don't have this concern for a legacy or anything like that. Like, I'm just going to do what's fun for the rest of my life.
You guys talked about this with J-Bo a few episodes ago, where, well, everybody wants to compare your success. Well, guess, like, you guys talk about, success doesn't look like the same thing for everybody.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right.
Exactly.
And so
self-defined.
Yeah. And, you know, what you think is successful for you may not be for me, and vice versa. You'll think, oh, well, God, I can't believe he's doing that. Well, guess what? I want to do it, and I like it, and I'm successful at it. So piss off.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah.
And
go ahead, Bill. I'll let you finish.
Well, it's just hard to, you know, like you had talked about earlier about always wanting to be liked. And I think I always kind of had that too. But in a lot of ways, what the people that do like me at this point, that's part of why they like me, is they think I don't give a fuck, and they respect that, and yada, yada, yada. But sure, I do give a fuck, you know, and I think most people on some level do. It's just, how do you, I guess, maybe not necessarily mask it, but more so like, how do you give a fuck, or how do you not give a fuck about giving a fuck? It's really
right. Yeah.
You know what it is like, because it's inevitable. Like, if I go up and I crush a crowd, and there's a guy up front that has his arms folded the whole show.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only thing I'm thinking about. And I did give a fuck that guy didn't. I do give a fuck. I do, but I also want to tell that guy to fuck off because everybody else liked me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, but at the same time, I do give a fuck. Why? Why didn't you?
And that's, again, Bill, that's something that comes with time. And there's a certain amount of self-awareness, and I'm not saying I'm the most self-aware person. I am stupidly blind a lot of times.
Yeah. Well, having too much self-awareness can be a detriment.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I've learned that my self-deprecation is a great tool because mm-hmm. that way you can't take yourself too seriously. And if you're able to do that to a degree, then that helps temper that. And I'm gonna go a little. Hopefully, I'm not straying into some too taboo territory here, boys.
There is no taboo territory.
But Bill, I had that feeling last week. Okay. I'm from Ogden. It's 14 miles north of Perry.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've been to Perry. I played sports in Perry. Sure. I did music and speech competitions in Perry. I have two now grown children, and I lived in Denver when Columbine happened. School shootings and mass shootings really, really bother me personally. And I'm not here to say, you know, I'm not here to get into the gun control debate and all that stuff. I'm just saying that school shootings, they bother me personally. Sometimes on a level, and I don't know why they do. They just do. And when that happened last week, it hit close to home. I have friends who are teachers. I responded to a tweet I'm a lawyer. I can sit here and parse the words and say, well, you know, I was really only directing it at one person and I wasn't saying anything controversial, but I got a lot of positive feedback from that. I also got a lot of negative feedback.
Right.
And, you know, people
stop. The nature of the beast with a hot button issue.
People stopped following me. And for the rest of that day, I was like, should I have said that? I'm like, you know, I started to question myself, but then I went to bed that I'm like, no, this is how I feel. And I always know my shtick isn't for everybody. Mm-hmm. What I do in Iowa City, dressing up like Elvis, doing all that stuff, I get it. Some people are just going to think it's stupid and not going to go, well, why the fuck is he doing that?
It's off-putting. Oh, yeah. Oh, I walked into a game this season and I had that ray gun shirt on that said offense special teams in the north end zone or whatever. Yeah. And I get down to my seat and I turn around to the crowd, you know, cause I sit in the front row. So I turn around to everybody and opened up my sweatshirt so they could all see the shirt, and everybody's, you know, the people that know and they're cheering or whatever. But then there's the people that aren't there every week, you know, that's part of it. Yeah. Part of it's people that are there every single week that know who you are and it's a thing. And then there's the people that are just there every once in a while. But anyway, my girlfriend told me later, like some guy that was like maybe two seats away or something, as I'm doing that, it's like, who the fuck's this guy think he is? I mean, that's just, you know, I mean,
he's the mayor of the North End Zone. Again, damn it.
Well, like the Illinois game at the end of the, after we score that touchdown and take lead in the Illinois game. I get up on the concrete thing and turn around to the crowd, and I'm trying to whip everybody up and get everybody to, like, this is our last chance to affect the game. Like, let's go.
Yeah.
And then the cops come over and yell at me and shit. But like, I just don't, in the moment, I really don't give a fuck what anybody thinks about me. You know what I mean? In that moment. Yeah. But then when it's over, I'm going, oh my God. Like, you know, did I embarrass myself? Well, the answer is no, I didn't embarrass myself because I'm not embarrassed.
Right.
And it's your true passion and that's who you are. It's not fake. It's not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's like, maybe people are thinking like, you know, who appointed this guy to be like in charge of us? Or because there have been times where like I've turned around, like I distinctly, I think it was the Michigan State game or not Michigan State, but I can't remember what game it was, but I turned around to the crowd at one point and was just like, you all suck right now. I was telling everyone, I was like, all of you suck. And I was like, cause I'm like, be the 12th man or stay home. That's my thing.
Yeah.
Like, let's go. And I know that that's off-putting to some people.
But it is.
I cannot, I can't help myself.
No, I'm a grown ass man who dresses up as a dead rock singer from 40 years ago.
He's not dead.
Oh, I know.
Your mom said he's not dead, and I'm hanging in there with her.
But no, it's who I am, and I'm not, you know, I do it, you know, why do you do it? Because it's fun. Yes. Because I enjoy doing it. People enjoy doing it. And I've been fortunate enough to make some really good friends and do some good things with it. And
I think that we're all guilty of judging people based on what they do for fun.
Oh my God. Yes.
And that can easily, I mean, like I've always thought of, you know, I always think, I mean, like Halloween, I always thought adults dressing up at Halloween was stupid. Like I never thought it was, but now I have a neighbor that dresses in costume to mow the lawn every time he mows the lawn. And I think it's the greatest thing in the world. Like another thing comes with age. Like as I've gotten older, I'm like, okay, this is fun for these people.
Right. Yes.
But then, you know, like I said, I hate country music. I think that country music has a certain culture to it. There's a certain culture to the fan base that's kind of the same as NASCAR. And mm-hmm. so like I judge people. I assume that somebody's a redneck idiot if I know they like country music or NASCAR. Yeah. And that's bad. I shouldn't be that way. But it's what happens.
Yeah. I, you know, it's interesting you mentioned it because I've, you know, I'll get a hard time from people because sometimes, like if I go somewhere, the social anthropologist in me wants to try to blend in so I can understand and enjoy the experience a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And the best example of that is my best friend lives in Ames. He was a teacher at Ames High School for 30 years. His older brother lives in Birmingham, Alabama. And his brother's oldest daughter went to Bama. And we'd always talked about going down to a game in Tuscaloosa. And then also we thought, hey, you know, it'd be really fun is if we could find a weekend where Bama had a home game on Saturday and the Talladega race was the next day. Mm. And we did that a couple of years. So like day one, we go to Tuscaloosa. I've got a red A visor on. I've got the dad Nike polo and the catch. I am suburban dad going to the game on Saturday. Trying to fit in. And the next day, you know, it's Talladega. Talladega racetrack is out in the middle of nowhere. It's next to the interstate. It's built on an old Army air base. And there is nothing out there. But there are 250,000 people who come to this. And, you know, I'm kind of a borderline NASCAR fan. I like the big crashes at the big tracks. Mm-hmm. And so to prepare for this, I had a Budweiser hat, a pair of Oakleys, a Dale Jr. shirt with the sleeves cut off, and jorts.
So you were dressing the part no matter what you're doing.
You got to immerse yourself into the culture when you get down there. You got to experience the whole thing.
And the guy we're staying with, his wife is from the South. She looks at me and goes, you know, you might be okay if you keep your mouth shut.
yeah. As soon as they hear your
mouth. I'm in line for something, concessions or something. And this woman goes, oh, she's got a Yankee voice like you.
Yeah. Yankee voice.
It's a hard thing to accept what some people like to do and what some people don't. Now obviously that has its limits, you know. Oh, I think it's fun to go, steal millions of dollars from old people. That's what I do for fun. Sure. Well, no.
Right. Yeah.
You know, but yeah, no, I get that, and it's hard. It's hard too, like when you've got kids and they don't like the exact same things that you do. It's fun when they cross over.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But then there's some things like, there's some things my kids are like, I'm like, I don't get that, but okay.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of what's fun to bond with them too. Bill, your son goes to games with you and whatever. Mm-hmm. My daughter, Caitlin, and I, we get along. We have a lot of interests or whatever, but the one thing that we do every year is we go tailgate. She goes to every tailgate with us. Yeah. It's the thing that we mm-hmm. do. It's kind of our thing, and it's nice to be able to bond over that kind of stuff. I'm gonna take a real quick break. Let's take a quick break. We'll get a word from Gravitate Co-working and Revelton Distilling Company. Welcome back, Bill. I'll let you answer your question. And then I want to reference a tweet I saw yesterday that came out last night during the game that fits exactly into what we're talking about. So
hey, those sponsors.
That's right. Let's get those sponsors in, and we'll be right back with Greg Sukow.
Why take the best corn in the world and make it into fuel when you could make it into whiskey? That's the question that launched Revelton, Iowa's most visible and fastest growing distillery. Owners Rob and Christy Taylor embrace the grain-to-glass philosophy, sourcing ingredients locally and overseeing on-premises production and bottling at their facility in Osceola. One sip, and you'll agree that Revelton's handcrafted whiskeys, gins, and vodkas are the best you've ever tasted. And with the launch of their rye whiskey, made with 100% Iowa-grown rye and corn, and their new bourbon coming soon, there's more Revelton to love than ever. Iowa's own Revelton Distillery. ReveltonDistillery.com. The great thing about working from home is working from home. The worst thing is working from home, especially for face-to-face collaborations with customers and coworkers. And let's face it, coffee shop meetings are neither private nor professional. So skip the trip to Starbs and investigate Gravitate Coworking Space. For more than 10 years, Gravitate has provided large and small office and conference spaces perfect for hosting meetings, workshops, or other events, as well as private phone booths for confidential conversations. Plus, all spaces include secure fiber internet, free coffee, and access to a kitchenette. All you need is your laptop. Gravitate does the rest. And renting space at Gravitate is surprisingly affordable. An hour of office space costs about the same as venti caramel macchiatos and breakfast sandwiches for two. Daily and monthly rates are also available with no long-term commitment. Learn more at GravitateCoworking.com. That's GravitateCoworking.com.
All right, and we're back. And I know that there's all kinds of Cyclone fans watching, but yes, we did take down the number two team in the country. So guess what, Houston? You're not in the AAC anymore. You're in a real conference. Welcome to a real conference. So
Houston, you have a problem.
What?
I said, Houston, you have a problem.
That's right. That's right.
Wow. So you were, how were you containing yourself this whole time? It had to have been on.
It was on for the first 3 minutes. I let you just babble on. It wasn't really.
Yeah, working. I was watching your eyes because I had it on right.
My eyes were not on the camera. They were completely.
Yeah, no, I saw that because we were.
I know. Beth Walling wanted to know why I was hosting a show, and I didn't have the heart to tell her that it was on behind my screens over here. So
I didn't even know you guys were playing.
That's because you have zero. We've had this discussion, Greg. Yeah. He has zero idea about Iowa State other than the 2 hours we play in basketball and the 3 hours we play in football. Otherwise, he doesn't give two shits. He couldn't name one team, one person on the team. I'm surprised he even knows who the coach is.
It's funny because, Bill, I'm the same way. Like, oh, you must hate Iowa State. Well, no, God.
Bill does.
You know, I do. Yeah, I hate them, but that's.
Yes, I grew up there. I mean, yeah. I literally grew up there, and I have so many friends really close to my two best friends in the world are both huge Cyclone fans.
Right.
And, you know, the only reason I have a smidge of happiness when we lose to them is because I know my friends are going to be happy. I mean, I cheer for, I want Iowa State to do well.
Greg's a nice guy.
This is what I'm saying. He's a better person than me. I told you.
Iowa State being good is good for Iowa too.
Yes.
It's, you know, it's mutually beneficial. The better Iowa State is, the better Iowa needs to and is going to be, especially when we play each other and you look at things like strength of schedules and who beat who and sure. If both teams are ranked, it makes a difference.
I get all those things.
Yeah.
He just wants our hearts and dreams crushed.
No, there are schools I hate, just Iowa State's not one of them.
I hate fans. I hate fan bases. I shouldn't say that I hate the Cyclone fan base, but like what I mean is like it's the people that I gotta deal with.
It's the stereotypical fans on both sides.
That yes.
The unreasonable and our trolls and all they want to do is just.
Well, like, here's
that's
a
all
good
they
example.
Live for is to be a complete ass. That's all they live for.
Here's a good example. I was walking by this chick the other day who's an Iowa State fan.
This young lady. Sorry.
And, go ahead. oh, fuck. I can't even do that now. Jesus Christ.
At least you didn't call her abroad.
Yeah, well, yeah. You know, whatever. Some fucking silly lass I was walking by. And And so, but I had a Hawkeye shirt on, and she's like, "Oh, you're gonna wear that?" I'm talking about the bowl game, you know. You're gonna wear that after the bowl, and I'm like, "Bitch, you fucking lost your bowl game. Like, why are you even saying this to me, right? And you lost to us. Why? What are you doing?" Mm-hmm. So that's what makes me want misery for them, is people like that. If that
that's
makes
that's
sense.
Why that's why I don't say anything about Brian Ferentz in the offense, because
then I have
we still could not beat them. So I mean,
yeah, I have, that's what I'm saying.
Now, last year when we beat them and the offense sucked, I got to talk all the shit I wanted for an entire year.
Right, and I was that's a perfect example. How many times I said that to people? That there's this dude almost daily giving me shit about Iowa's offense. He's an Iowa State fan. And I'm like, you fucking lost to us. You're an idiot. Like, how bad are you then? Like, what? How bad's your offense? What are you fucking talking about? So, yeah, I mean, but at the same, it's just proof is all I'm saying. Like, there are people out there. I've seen it on Twitter and stuff where people talk about Iowa fans are kind of talk about how we don't pay attention to Iowa State and you pay attention to, you know, that argument or whatever. See this bullshit. They fucking beat you. They beat you. I don't give a fuck who else you played. Hey, who else we played.
We won the last Big Ten West title there will ever be.
Yeah.
That's right.
Jesus fucking Christ. Memphis isn't even in a Power 5 conference and you got beat by Ohio. Would you shut the fuck up?
You know, oh my god, we need a stroke sponsor is what we need. We need to just,
you know, talking about teams I hate. Here's your segue. I was rooting for Washington last night.
Yes,
I don't like Michigan.
Okay, so I'm gonna bring this tweet up from last night.
That was a very begrudging root for Michigan for me. I don't like them. Yeah. I like them better than Ohio State.
They're same sides of the different coin. They're different sides of the same coin. To me.
Yeah, a little bit. I feel like Ohio State fans are more arrogant.
I think
Michigan's
so
right. No. They're equal. I mean, they would get in an argument with each other about which fan base is more arrogant. Well, I'm more arrogant. No, you are. That's how that would end.
So last night during the game, let's see, at about 9:40, this was tweeted out. I don't even know who this guy is. This guy named Jack McGuire. But there was a
oh yeah.
You see this?
So Randy Dawson.
Yeah. So Super Bowl I QB at halftime smoking a cigarette tonight. JJ McCarthy, therapist doing a mental health check in the fourth quarter. How's that saying go? Hard times create strong men. This is exactly what we've talked about on this podcast, about how people are told to just toughen up and shut up and take your lumps. Quite a few people later on pointed out that Lenny Dawson lost that Super Bowl. So, yeah. but
I'm struggling to figure out the point of this tweet.
The point of the tweet is that he's calling JJ McCarthy soft, I believe.
You don't need a mental health therapist. You need to have a cigarette and get out there and play.
Yeah, right. I don't understand how Clay, like this. Okay. Like to me, this is what I think. This is what I read when I see that. Cause I don't know what this guy's intent is. Right. I read that as, just dealing with it in two different ways, dealing with the stress of a championship game in two different ways. Like, oh, this is how we dealt with it back then. Now we got therapists. Like, awesome.
Yeah, like, that's called humankind progress.
Yeah. Right. Like, I mean, I'm sure that you're right, Chris. I think that your instincts are probably on point, but
guess what else?
I'm struggling to see. I know the shot that he's trying to take, but I don't feel like his words take that shot good enough.
No, he tried.
Yeah, he's not very good.
And you know, we didn't used to have seat belts in cars. If you got in a car wreck and you went through the windshield, you better just 100%. Man up.
I just was having this argument with somebody about the idea of working from home. Like there's like Elon Musk is basically saying that people that work from home don't work. And then there's other CEOs that say, you know, the employees are happier. And there's that kind of argument going back and forth. And the argument that I keep hearing from people that are against the work from home model go, well, what did you do before you could work from home? And I'm like, well, what did you do before indoor plumbing, you dumb fuck? Like, that is the dumbest. Well, I had to shit in an outhouse. Everybody else should have to, too. Things right. get better sometimes.
What did I do before work from home? I got less done because assholes like you were standing at my desk chatting at me all the time.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. And now I get more done in less time, and I can do a load of laundry, and it's better for my work-life balance.
Yeah.
And I'm right. happier.
How dare you have that?
Yeah. I mean, it's...
You know, the fact that, you know... That is happening, you know, it's not just that it's happening, it's that men are being open about it, which is the hardest thing to do. As a man, we don't want to ask for help. You know, we want to figure things out on our own, tough it out. I'm a self-made man. I'll figure this out. There are some things you cannot fix on your own. And finally, mental health, specifically for men, is starting to come into that light where you see guys, you know, the great example of this, you know, tying it back to the Hawkeyes is when Patrick McCaffrey took some games off last season.
Yes.
And I could not have been more proud of him for doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, J-Bo talked about the intense scrutiny that every single thing that they do is under. And I think about Patrick O'Connor. Well, guess what? They've had the spotlight on him since they moved to Iowa City in 2010, just because of who their dad was. They went through elementary, junior high, and high school, you know,
with huge expectations
with that. And with that spotlight burning on them and, you know, good for Patrick to realize that he needed to do something different. He needed to make a change. And I'm glad he did that. So many times people are afraid to make that change or afraid to ask for help, and they get up to the brink, and sometimes the brink gets them.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying at all that was the case with Patrick or anything like that, but you know, I've been to the brink myself, guys, and it sucks. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad I was able to come back from the brink because it's hard.
I think it was really harder even for him because of the pressure that he was under.
Yes.
You and I and whatever else are, I think, is hard. But when you are expected by fans and by media and whatever else, that, you know, they forget that, number one, these are 18 to 22-year-old kids, that even though they may get some NIL money or whatever else, they're still kids. I mean, I had a job when I was 20. I still made terrible mistakes. I still made terrible decisions. I still wasn't full. I wasn't where I am now. So for that kid to have that kind of pressure and knowing that his brother's going to have to now get questions about it, his dad's going to have questions about it, to be able to have the courage to say, I still need to put myself first, is commendable.
And
well, to me also the honesty about it.
Yeah.
He could have easily just said he's battling an undisclosed illness. He could have easily said a lot of different things, but instead he actually came out and said, I am dealing with mental health issues. And that to me is the bigger part of the picture, because the whole thing revolves around toughness. And the more athletes and men that are in the spotlight that are viewed as quote unquote tough guys.
Yeah.
The more those that will come out and talk about dealing with these things, the better that is for all of us just as a species, just our evolution as humans.
You're talking about it. You're talking about a kid who had to go through cancer in junior high.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you're going to say he's not tough because he took time to his own mental health. Get
100. Exactly. Right. Exactly. And he's such a great example. And I like seeing, you know, I would love to see more football players be open.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's a sport especially. And I think in a lot of ways, that's why I've I find myself wanting to be more open about it. I mean, I've always been fairly open about my mental health, even when it wasn't cool. My friends gave me shit. I was talking about anxiety and shit when I was 17, 18 years old. Mm-hmm. And I had friends giving me shit about it or whatever. But
right.
I've always been viewed as, and I never asked for this, you know, but there's people that I'm viewed as a tough guy. I have a look about me. I have an attitude that I walk around with. I guess I present myself a certain way mm-hmm. that people on the outside looking in view me as a tough seeming guy. So right. I think that my openness about these things will help other people, which in turn, you know, helps me.
Right. And when I was a kid, I didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. I the pit of my stomach that I would have when I'd go to sleep at night, and the worry, and I would, or things like I would go by and touch a door and I'd have to walk back and touch the door again, because I felt like if I didn't, I was going to, something bad was going to happen. All kinds of those things. And I would sit there and I would think, I don't know what that is. Like, what is that? And now it's so much better to be able to know that my kids can at least identify that and recognize what that is.
Absolutely.
And you still go touch the door again, don't you?
I do. You know what? I'll tell you a funny story. This is a true story. And we were doing Side of the Storm earlier tonight, and Brent Curvey owns Coach's Kolaches, and he said he had surgery a couple weeks ago. Said the other day he was still a little bit on some medicine. He left the store door unlocked. When I was 17 or 18, I was working at Skeffington's Formal Wear, and I worked at the store in Windsor Heights, and I left. Well, I was working at the Southside one. And my boss called me and said I had forgot to lock the overhead door. So one night I was working at the Windsor Heights store. I lived on the south side. I locked the door. I literally stood there for 10 minutes pulling on the door to see if it was locked. And then I would convince myself maybe I pulled it so hard that it jimmied the lock. So I got to go back and check it again. I did it for 10 minutes, drove all the way to the south side, was so sick to my stomach, I drove all the way back to Windsor Heights again to double check it again. Like that there's something seriously wrong with that. And my kids now, like, I will leave and I'll be in the car with Caitlin and I'll say, hey, did you see the garage door shut? And she'll look at me like, yeah, what are you, fucking idiot? And I'm like, I saw it close, but it might have kicked back up. I don't know. Did you see it go down? Yeah. Can you verify for me, please, so I don't freak out for the next 40 minutes?
See, that's the kind of shit you need to smoke weed for. That's the that's the kind of shit right there, Chris. See, I never worry about whether or not the garage door was like shut all the way, because if it wasn't, fuck it. I mean. do you find yourself, Greg, with any kind of day-to-day routines, anything that you do to kind of, you know, get you in the right frame of mind, anything to trying to cope with that anxiety, to knock it, you know, stop it as it's heading at you, you know, nip it in the bud, so to speak?
Yeah. You know, the first thing that I did is, you know, finally admitting I needed to see someone about it, mm-hmm. you know, and see a therapist. I still talk to my therapist every couple of weeks or so, and I needed medication, and the medication for me I was worried. My biggest fear was, oh, well, this is going to stop me from being who I am. It's going to change my personality mm-hmm. somehow. And it doesn't. What it did was it helped tamp down the anxiety and the depression. So me as a person could learn to deal with it. You know, is it gone constantly? Does it? No, that's not how it works.
Right.
But it's in a place where, you know, my rational, logical brain can win more than my illogical, emotional brain when it comes to stuff, you know, like, oh, am I good enough? Or, oh, am I going to screw this up? And that makes a difference. It sucks to go through life every day being scared of something and being worried about something. And, you know, the thing that goes hand in hand with that is I'm not the greatest at it, but I'm trying, I'm getting a little bit better. Simple things. Drink water during the day and get enough sleep. I worked for Sleep Number for 10 years and, you know, free Sleep Number plug. But they, you know, they did so much research on how much getting solid quality sleep affects not just your body physically, but your brain and your mental, you know, your mental health as well. And, you know, those two things are big ones, and they're simple to do. They're simple, you know, sort of, you know, oh, it's a big lifestyle change. Well, no, you drink more water and you go to bed at a decent hour and get some sleep. Those are the first things in the world to do, but they are sometimes. So,
well, that's, you know, that's what I've found too, now that I'm diabetic, is drinking water all the time keeps my blood sugar down. So I'm drinking way more water now than I ever have in my life. And I'm noticing how much hydration, you know, has made it basically how often I was dehydrated. Perpetually
and when you're dehydrated, you feel like shit. And then when you feel like shit, that opens the door for, you know, those negative emotions
even
to start
worse.
Right. Yeah.
So the meds kind of keep you in a place where you don't get into that rut where you're just kind of in a hole that you can't dig your way out. You kind of get to where you can, because once you get in that hole, you can't deal with anything.
No,
and just stay in the fetal position.
And for, you know, that's how it manifests for some people. For me, I was like manic and like I wanted to run screaming from the room and jump out the window. And it helped me sort of figure out how to control medication and therapists and friends and talking about it. Talking about it to people makes such a difference, because there are people who literally saved my life because I talked to them and they talked back to me. And I think about people who didn't, people who didn't have that ability to say, I got a real problem here and I got to talk to somebody. And, you know, oh, well, they're rich and they're famous. And they, you know, I live in the Bay Area now, guys. And I was in Tiburon, California on Saturday. And that's where Robin Williams lived.
Yeah. You know,
here's a guy who was, I mean, everybody loved him. He was wildly popular. He had more money than God. And he killed himself over depression.
Right.
You know, oh, well, he had everything. Well, no, he clearly didn't have everything. He didn't have a way to deal with mental health issues.
There's a great Jim Carrey quote where he says he wishes everybody could have all the money and success that they ever wanted so they could see that it's not the answer.
No.
Yeah, right.
It's not.
I thought that was extremely profound and just right on point. I mean, and, you know, Robin Williams is a great example of just the extremes.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And I promise you, for every, you know, there's untold number of people who go through that nobody knows about.
Well, you watch, you know, Robin Williams is a great example of how far we've come kind of educationally.
Yes.
Because if you look back and you just watch him on stage, now knowing what we know now, you look at that and go, wow, he's probably dealing with a lot of shit.
Right.
Just the way he acted, how manic he was.
Yeah.
Like, I bet he goes home and crashes. Like, everybody thinks that he went home and just acted like that all the time.
Right.
You never know what somebody else is going through in their head, in their household, any of that, you know. And you know, to sort of circle back to Chris reaching out to me originally and asking me
this is just what I was going to reference. Go ahead.
I'm again, over the years, I've been very fortunate that I've got a lot of friends who are in the media. I can say, you know, the guys at Channel 13 at WHO, I love them. Keith Murphy is great. Ed Wilson is like my brother. They're fantastic people.
I just got done doing shows with Ed Wilson.
Bill Blaze.
Bill Blaze. Yeah, he called me Bill Blaze. I gave him shit about that.
And he's a great, you know, and one of those people is David Eichholt, who covers Iowa as a beat reporter for 24/7. And that is Mark Morehouse, if you remember him when he was at the Gazette and has since retired. But Mark wrote this great thing about what the beat life is like for those guys and how, you know, how challenging it is. Oh, well, you have to go cover sports all day for your job. Well, yeah, and you're also in very, very fierce competition now more than ever for people to listen to what you have to say over what somebody else has to say. And for David to come out, you know, it's unfortunate the way that that played out. And the Cliff Notes version is, you know, David ended up not going to cover Iowa's bowl game in person. And David came out and said, listen, I had a mental health issue. I didn't want to be forced into revealing that, but here's what happened and here's what I'm dealing with. And I've known David a long time and I love him. He's like my little brother. And, you know, I'm proud of him for stepping up and saying, you know, this is what happened to me. And you know, I'm dealing with it, because it to me, it just goes to show again, you don't know what someone else is dealing with. No. You don't know.
It's a little unfair. You know, it's unfair that, because it's kind of like one of those deals where he didn't get to come out of the closet on his own.
Right.
You know, he got pushed out, and that's unfortunate and unfair, but
100%.
In a way, I'm also glad that he did it, because it's also like, oh, now you get to feel like a dick for calling me out.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Sometimes it's a shock therapy, right?
Yeah.
Maybe it's to the point where, okay, I've held my tongue. Now I'm going to drop the bomb here, and maybe it will wake you up to the fact that
you're being a
there's
dick.
Other reasons why other people might not be there. Right. Yeah. So think before you open your mouth, think before you tweet something out.
You know, that's maybe one of the upsides. You know, we all, to some degree or another, we all live very public lives now with social media and some of the communication, you know, and some people choose to, Bill, you and I choose to live very public lives. I've been very public about, you know, who I am. And it was funny when I first sort of started doing this, like, oh, is it okay if we use your name? Like, I had a secret identity or something.
I'm
the easiest guy in the world. I mean, you could type in my name and the first thing that'll pop up is a picture of me as Hawkeye Elvis. Mm-hmm. And you can find out all kinds of stuff about me online. I'm very public about it, but I always have been. And I've been comfortable doing that from my days back in television. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad that I'm able to use sort of my public life to talk about this and to tell people who don't have, you know, who don't have as much of a public life, but who watch or listen to me for some reason, know that, hey, they might be going through the exact same thing or to it to some degree. And it's okay. And there is help and there are resources.
Yeah.
And please, for the love of God, for yourself, for the people who love you, for the people you love, utilize those resources.
It's the thing is, you don't, you know, as far as, you know, the public life, you know, of course you choose, like, we don't, it's not like we have like millions of followers and like we're these huge influencers or anything, but we do have more people paying attention than the average person.
Yeah.
Right.
So it is, to me, it is the responsible thing to do, to use a platform that you have that is larger than most. It's not the largest by any means.
No,
not even close. So I don't want people to think I'm trying to act like I'm more than I am. But the bottom line is there are more people paying attention to what I do and say than your average person.
Same.
So I have to give a shit sometimes what comes out of my mouth.
Yeah. And it's interesting, you know, my social media platform of choice, God help me, is still Twitter. I'm not going to call it this other letter. Right. And people are like, oh, why are you still on there? It's such a hellhole. I'm like, because I've got my,
I don't want to mess around with other shit.
Well, and I've got my lance and I'm charging at the windmill because God damn it, I'm going to do something good on this hellhole, even if it's for one person or make one person feel better. I go, oh, that's kind of cool. Yeah. That's Mike West.
I've had the same interaction. My wife has asked me several times why I'm on Twitter and why I put up with the negativity and whatever else. And I say, well, because I've also found a lot of joy and a lot of good people through there and have made a lot of difference, whether it's when I put a tweet out and say my wife's school needs hats and gloves. I had 15 DMs of people giving stuff and we were able to help 30 kids. I mean, yeah. That's worth it to me, right?
Yes.
Same thing as you've said, Bill. My platform is not that big. I have a decent amount of followers. A lot of them probably don't like the stuff that comes out of my mouth sometimes. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. But the amount of times that I had people stop up to me when I was in Memphis and say, hey, I follow you on Twitter. It's really nice to meet you and things like that. Those are the things that you feel like you're at least making some kind of a difference in good, right? And I've told this story before. And Greg, you're probably not aware of it, but 6 years ago, I had cancer. I remember just going through it and remember saying, when I make it out of this, I'm going to make it my job to make sure that everybody knows what he did for me and what good I can do for people. And that was part of the reason why we've started this whole thing. Yeah. And that was, and Bill reaching out to me last year and wanting to do this podcast, it stemmed, I think, a little bit from Patrick McCaffrey's story and how important that was. And it's fed into this. And we have gotten a few messages from people that say, hey, I tune in because it helps me. And you know what? If it's two people, I'm perfectly fine with that. So.
Excellent.
Yeah. I mean, well, if we reach one person, we really suck. But
right. I blame Bill because he's never on Twitter.
Yeah, I do fucking suck. I only go on Twitter to bitch about referees. It's really
right. Oh, real. So I don't know how you guys are on time. If you're wrapping up, but I got a nice.
Let's finish with it. Let's finish with a nice referee story.
Let's finish with a nice referee story, Bill. So this is for you. So, if you guys have never been to the Sanford Pentagon in Sioux Falls, go there and watch a game because it's awesome. It's only a 3,200 seat gymnasium and they still have like the old school clock on the wall. It's a gorgeous facility. And every year they get several high name, Power Five teams to come play there. Mm-hmm. And the couple times that, I always played there three times, the Gonzaga game, nobody could be there for it. The first time was the Colorado game. And, we weren't very good that season, but it was a blast. It was a rowdy Saturday night. Mm-hmm. And it was mostly Iowa fans. And, you know, they were selling Bush Light tall boys. And it was a great time. So 2 years ago, we play Utah State up there. And I take my godson, so he's from Ames. He went to Iowa, though. So, to my friend who lives in Ames. And I'm like, okay, well, you and I are going to go. He was a manager on the Iowa baseball team at the time, too. So we go up there, and I splurge, and I get the courtside seats. And when I say courtside, like sometimes when the team's warming up, you'd have to pull your feet back. Otherwise, they're gonna get stuck. And we're playing Utah State. And Utah State had a pretty good guard. And Fran got a tee, like 3 minutes into the game, because this kid flopped and drew a charge on Joe Toussaint, and the entire crowd went crazy and it was just bananas and everybody screaming. And so the second half, it was kind of tight in the first half. Iowa ended up winning the game. The second half, 5 minutes in, sure as shit, called Joe Toussaint on another charge against the same guy. And again, the crowd is going nuts, but it was a media timeout. And Kelly Pfeiffer was one of the officials.
Oh, that mother.
Now, for those watching who don't know who Kelly Pfeiffer is, he's the guy Fran gave the stare down to.
Oh, my God. That's my favorite. That's my favorite meme I use all the time.
Yeah.
So, and during the timeout, one referee goes to the far end. One stands at middle court. The other one goes to the far end. My seats are directly parallel with the free throw line. Okay. So, Kelly Pfeiffer is sitting, I don't know, 20, 30 feet in front of me, standing there, and I'm in full Elvis gear. And I stand up, I go, really? That's what you saw? You saw him have his feet set. Really? That's what you saw? Really? That's all I said. But he turns and looks at me and goes, do you want to stay or do you want to go? And I paused for a second. I said, yeah, I want to stay. And I sat down. But so I went to another Iowa game after that. And I'm fortunate to know everybody associated with the team. And I was talking to Sherman Dillard about it. And I was talking to Kirk Sparrow about it too. And they're both like, he responded to
exactly. Yes! That's what I'm saying. Fuck that fucking guy. I would have been like, fuck you.
Because the funniest part was about 5 minutes later, he finally called a blocking foul on this kid.
Nice. Yeah. See, that story right there encompasses exactly what I'm talking about with referees, Chris.
100%. Well, you know, speaking of referees,
really, he didn't even say shit to him other than really that's what you saw. Like,
that's literally all I said to him.
Yeah. But, and the guy says, do you want to stay or do you want to fuck
it
off?
It bothered him so much, which to me meant, okay, he knows I was right.
Tiny little man.
Speaking of referees, be sure to tune in next Wednesday for Three Blind Refs when we have three referees on talking about basketball.
I would have but another example, I would have gotten kicked out as soon as he said, do you want to stay? Do you want to go? I would have been like, what? Fuck you.
And then yet again, it's the complete opposites that are the mayor of the North End.
I just can't stand people. If you're not my dad, you don't get to tell me what to do. That's really just what it boils down to. I don't care if you're a cop. I don't care if you're a referee. As long as I'm not breaking the law and I'm not physically harming someone, you do not get to tell me what to do under any circumstances.
In retrospect, there's a tiny part of me that wishes I would have gotten kicked out because
exactly. Hawkeye Elvis is getting
Elvis has left the building.
Elvis has left the building.
Oh, with that.
That would have been and then they get it on TV. What would have been better is it's like they kick you out, but you resist. Like, so there's like people, there's like security guards, one with each arm, and you're screaming at the fucking ref.
Dragon.
Yeah, they're just like, Elvis has left the building, folks. Oh,
I would like to point out that I let go the joke that I could have made that it was nice that Iowa could finally sell out a basketball game in a small.
I know!
3,000 seats. I want to give you that 200. I don't want to shortchange it.
It's funny that you say that because we're watching right now how Caitlin Clark sells out every game.
It's crazy. Yeah, it's amazing.
You know, all this time I've always thought with men's basketball, it was like, well, you know, it's not like football. It's a Tuesday night in Iowa City, so all the Hawkeye fans that live in Des Moines aren't going to go to Iowa City. Whereas Ames is only 30 minutes away, blah, blah, blah. But then you see the Caitlin Clark effect happen, and you're like, oh, they can sell out every game. Right. Enough people will go, but it took a generational talent. And I mean, Caitlin Clark is so good, it's like the circus.
I lived in Denver in 97. The 97-98 season when a certain Chicago Bull was playing his last season with the Chicago Bulls and the Denver Nuggets were absolute trash. And guess what? McNichols Arena sold out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were there to see Jordan.
She's a generational talent. There's no doubt about that.
But to see that the, you know, now I know like there is an element of, well, if you were just better, we were really, really good, I think the arena would sell out just fine. I don't know. We've also had some pretty good teams in the last several years, and they weren't really selling out then either. So I don't know. I don't know how to explain that.
That's a whole nother episode. Greg,
well, it has nothing to do with my mental health, I'll tell you
that's
that.
That's right. But it's not helping your mental health. That's
right. It doesn't help, but you know, I'm watching most of the basketball games on TV anyway. I take football a lot more personally.
Same. Greg, thank you so much for coming on. I know you're going to be interviewed tomorrow morning too on what? Tell everybody what you're going to be on.
Yeah. So if you may have seen this, 'cause you follow me, but
I did see it.
A former U of I student named Skylar Knudsen, I was from Des Moines, contacted me a couple years ago and he wanted to do a documentary about Hawkeye Elvis. And he followed me around and interviewed me for almost 2 years. And what it ended up being was about my mom, who's got late stage Alzheimer's and dementia, and just our relationship and, you know, the bond that we were kind of creating through my being Hawkeye Elvis and her coming, her making my costumes and her coming to the game with me. And I'll be on, both of us will be on Talk in Iowa tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Central on Iowa Public Radio to talk about Skylar's documentary.
Awesome.
Yeah, it is. It's great. And, you know, I definitely feel, how are things going now? And how is that, you know,
it's been hard, mom. You know, I finally had to have mom move into an assisted care facility, and I'm working in the process of selling her house and doing all those shitty things that come along with this. So
yeah, mm-hmm.
From the Bay Area, so you're out there now. Right, you're not in Minneapolis.
Yeah, I'm flying back. I'm flying back Saturday and working on that stuff next week. So I will be at the Purdue game on the 20th in full regalia. Nice. To watch us hopefully topple Purdue finally.
Yeah, see if you can stick a foot out and trip that fucking
wood. Dude, he is so tall in person. I'm 6'5", and I saw him in NBA Summer League a couple years ago, and I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah,
he's so tall.
Monster.
Yeah, he's a monster. All right, guys. We're gonna end tonight. Yeah. Again, thanks everybody for tuning in. Thank you, Greg, for hopping on. Appreciate everybody that tunes in to Three Beards Media Podcast. Got a lot of great content. Old Man Strength records tomorrow night. Ball Don't Lie on Thursday. Hawk's Eye View goes on every Thursday night, so check those guys out. And, Bill, you got anything else to go?
I don't. We're going to see how this whole Remington Awards thing goes.
I just want to see you in a suit. I think there's a photo out there of your promotional photo. You're wearing at least a suit jacket.
I got a jacket on. Yeah, I mean, there's an old headshot with a jacket.
There's an old headshot out there.
But that's not a suit. That's like,
no.
You know?
No.
And I felt uncomfortable in that shit, too.
I can't wait to see it. All right.
All right.
All right. With that, thanks, everybody. Have a great night.
Love.